Let's go to the Dude Maker Hotline and say hello to the one and only Joseph Pierce, the author of, you can see behind me, Shakespeare on Love, Seeing the Catholic Presence in Romeo and Juliet, and Through Shakespeare's Eyes, Seeing the Catholic Presence in the Plays of William Shakespeare, William of Stratford upon Avon, I believe is how it goes. Our host of the Shakespeare Radio Film Festival, still available in the Founders Trading Post store at crusadechannel.com/Hamlet. Today, though, even though you can get those books which are signed by Joseph behind me, there's still a couple copies left. Today, our subject is Flannery O'Connor. Joseph, my dear old friend, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Mike. How are you?
I am very, very well. Yeah, always excited.
I've left the window open so that you can hear the roosters. I know you like that. It helps keep you awake in the morning.
Joseph, I want to start off here by showing the audience that's watching on YouTube. This is the St. Austin Review, Volume 20, Number 2. This is March, April of 2020. American Literature in the 20th Century, and you chose Aaron Urbanchik to write an essay called Free for the Pursuit of Wisdom, Backwoods Fundamentalist Homeschooling, and Flannery O'Connor's The Violent Bear It Away. And I'm just going to show the audience this particular essay here. There's Flannery when she was near death. There's a photo of her. There's when she was very young and beautiful. The more I learn about Flannery O'Connor, the more I'm intrigued by her story. What biographical info can you give us?
Well, she was born in the South, spent most of her life at a small village called Milledgeville in Georgia, about an hour and a half drive south of where I'm speaking from. But spent her childhood in Savannah, Georgia, so she's a girl of the South. She wrote about the South. She's mostly known for her short stories, but she also wrote two novels, of which The Violent Bear It Away, to which you just referred, is one. And she suffered from lupus from a very young age, and this actually caused her early death. So, what we have of her writing, you know, we can only imagine how much more we might have had if she hadn't been tragically killed by that illness of lupus. So that's basically who she is. She's one of the most important American writers ever, and certainly one of the greatest American writers of the 20th century.
God has a funny way of choosing the least likely candidates. You can't see a photograph of Flannery and not immediately know that it's Flannery.
Yeah, exactly. With those horn-rimmed glasses, a certain thing about her, you know. And of course, the other thing we should know about her, she's a lovable and affable eccentric who kept peacocks throughout her life. So she's sort of her symbol, if you like, can be seen as a peacock. As one who keeps ducks and chickens, I sympathize with that eccentricity.
So David Simpson asked me, David said, Mike, when you get on with Joseph tomorrow, will you ask him about this quote? Quote, evil is not a problem to be solved, but a mystery to be endured. If Joseph knows where that comes from, that's Flannery O'Connor.
Well, I'm guessing it's from her book Being a Manners, which is his collection of essays. But I could be wrong. Would you correct me?
No, I'm not going to correct you. She also said you have to push as hard on the age that pushes against you. So, if you go to Brainy Quotes or any of these quote sites, there's pages upon pages of Flannery O'Connor quotes.
The other thing, Mike, that I should have mentioned, because that's what informs those two quotes that you've just given, is that she was a very devout follower of the philosophy and theology of St. Thomas Aquinas. So she was very much up with the connection between faith and reason and understood her faith on the deepest levels of philosophy and theology. And that's what animates her non-fictional writings, from which you've just quoted, but also her fiction.
Now, I don't know if you know this, but there's an American filmmaker that's making a movie about her. Did you know that?
I did not.
The first documentary film on Flannery O'Connor, Uncommon Grace, The Life of Flannery O'Connor, is a documentary. It's being made by an outfit called Beata Productions. When I was promoting your appearance on Twitter, he saw it and he retweeted it, and I looked him up, And they're apparently someone has taken an interest in. And why shouldn't they take an interest in? I called her, and I know I got this wrong, so I said, I'll let Joseph fill this in. She's not the American Shakespeare. Maybe she's a Southern American Chaucer. What would you say? She's the American version of a great English playwright or novelist.
Well, actually, Chaucer's a good place to start, because obviously Chaucer's best known for his Canterbury Tales, and that's a collection of short stories in which he gives a sort of characterization of the English people of his time. They're very much like, very grotesque, a bit like gargoyles that are accentuated and caricatured to accentuate their characteristics, whether they be virtuous or vicious characteristics. So in that, actually, that you've hit that nail on the head. I can't think of an English writer that would be analogous to Flannery O'Connor any more than Chaucer, quite frankly.
Now, Mr. Urbanschick's piece at the St. Austin Review, he reviews the book, The Violent Barrett Away. So I read the entire essay last night, highlighted some parts in it that I said, well, I'm going to talk to Joseph about this. But you said that she wrote two novels. So this is, is this the first or is this the second one?
This was the second, the final one. The other one is called Wise Blood.
And now, you met my daughter, Reagan. She's into reading novels now. She asked me, Dad, do you have any novels? Send them to me that you think I should read. I'll read. If you were going to send one to your 22-year-old daughter, I think you actually have one somewhere, or a 20-something-year-old daughter, that has strayed away from the faith, which one would you send?
Well, I tell you what, actually, that I would be tempted to send The Violent Barrett Away by Flannery O'Connor. It's very dark, but the lessons it teaches are very profound, and she doesn't preach in the sense of which would put anybody straight away from the faith off. You try to preach to someone who strayed away, they just close their ears. So you need to be able to get past those watchful dragons, as Tolkien and Lewis would say. The Violent Barrett Away, basically, what I love about it, and I do love it, Erin Abanzik's article, where he talks about education and homeschooling versus public schooling and the different philosophies, but I think the key component of The Violent Barrett Away is the innocent victim, who therefore becomes a Christ figure. The only innocent person in the whole novel is the character of Bishop, who has Down syndrome. Now, this speaks very closely to me, because we have a son who has Down syndrome, so I find it actually very, very painful, excruciating, in fact, to read, because of the way he's treated, the cruelty with which he's treated in the novel. But he's the innocent victim in the midst of all this. So, to have someone who's mentally disabled to actually be the person who, in some paradoxical way, has more wisdom than the others, because in his simplicity, he just loves, whereas all the others, because of the convoluted relativistic philosophies they hold, or fundamentalist Christian philosophy they hold, they actually make life complicated, and they're prejudiced by their own pride for being able to see it properly. So if you like, a naive, simple innocence, even as expressed in someone with a mental handicap, such as Down syndrome, is closer to the truth than all of these philosophies of sophistry.
Yeah, and now, how did you pronounce Mr. Aaron's last name? How did you pronounce Urbanschick?
Urbanschick, Erin Abanzik, yeah.
So he writes this. I just want to quote from the St. Austin Review. Now, there's three main characters, right? There's Raber, there's Bishop, and then there's Tabor, right?
Yes.
Okay. So Raber's treatment of Bishop reveals the nihilism underneath his ideology. Flannery O'Connor used the term nihilism purposefully in a 1955 letter. She writes that if you live today, you breathe in nihilism. In or out of the church, it's the gas you breathe. I read that quote, and I read it a couple times. I sent it to David Simpson. I went, I think we live in an era where we live and breathe nihilism. Wouldn't you concur?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we live in a very nihilistic culture, and we have done, certainly since the ascendancy of Nietzscheanism, so from the late 19th century onwards, we've lived in a very nihilistic culture. And, of course, one consequence of nihilism is annihilation. So any culture which succumbs to nihilism ultimately annihilates itself. And that's what we're seeing happening in the West today, is the suicide, the annihilation, which is the consequence, the deadly fruit, the poisonous fruit of nihilism.
And then Mr. Urbancic writes, Uncle Mason homeschools, so tar water, I said Tabor's tar water, so tar water might have maximum autonomy, but not as the world knows it. The following captures Mason's philosophy of education, and he quotes from the book. I saved you to be free, your own self. If you were living with Raber, you'd be going to school. The old man had always impressed on Tarwater his good fortune in not being sent to school. The Lord had seen it fit to guarantee the purity of his upbringing to preserve him from contamination, to preserve him as his elect servant, trained by a prophet for prophecy. While other children his age were herded together in a room to cut out paper pumpkins under the direction of a woman, he was left free for the pursuit of wisdom. The companions of his spirit, Abel and Enoch and Noah and Job, Abraham and Moses, King David and Solomon and all the prophets, from Elijah who escaped death to John whose severed head struck terror from a dish. It just makes me want to go grab that book and read it. What a mind that stitches prose together like that, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have a beautiful mind and then a beautiful literary gift. You put those two things together because, you know, the two things necessary for anything which is wonderful in the sense that the Fanny O'Connor's work is wonderful, you have to know what you're saying and then you have to know how to say it. And she has both that great ability to communicate with beauty while actually knowing what she's talking about. Because, you know, communicating with beauty, if you're a servant of the lie, is just creates something poisonous and dangerous. But when you've got someone who knows the truth from a Thomistic perspective, as Fanny O'Connor does, and then can express it with such eloquence and beauty, you have a formula for brilliance, which really makes her one of the great writers.
And then Mr. Urbancic concludes, and this is the last line from the article from the April issue of the St. Austin Review, which, by the way, if you just look up STAR, Joseph Pierce, you'll find this website. You can subscribe to St. Austin Review. Beautiful, a full-color magazine now published by my good buddy Winston Elliott, and Joseph's good buddy Winston Elliott, Winston and Barbara Elliott, out of the Center for the Defense of Freedom, I think it's called, down in Houston. Here's the conclusion, Joseph. Beautiful. The sum of Mason's teaching and O'Connor's central message in The Violent Bear It Away is this. We are educated for freedom. And freedom means finding one's place in the redeeming action of the Lord Jesus Christ. Who wouldn't want to read a book about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, you thoroughly recommended it. I would thoroughly recommend it. I would certainly send it to your daughter, and I would encourage all of your listeners to check it out, The Violent Bear It Away by Fanny O'Connor. But they should be warned, it's excruciatingly dark. You know, but that's what she's doing. We live in very dark times. And what she does, she shows the darkness of the age, the ugliness of itself. She holds up a mirror to nihilism and shows where it leads. But she always has within the stories that silver lining of grace, which is what actually liberates us from the darkness. Now, it's subtle and it's brilliant, but don't expect a breezy read because that's not what you're going to get.
Now, Joseph Pierce, the author of those two Shakespeare books behind me, Through Shakespeare's Eyes and Shakespeare on Love, available in limited supply in our Founders Trading Post at mikechurch.com/shop. Get you a copy today, signed by Joseph himself. Joseph, the main reason I asked you to come on today is because knowing what I know about Flannery, almost all of my knowledge came from the St. Austin Review. Was there a Flannery O'Connor issue that you guys put out, or did she just pop up in other issues?
Well, she certainly pops up in other issues. I mean, the article you just referenced was a theme issue earlier this year on American literature in general. But we did have an issue just on Flannery O'Connor, I think, about 3 years ago. And I dare say that there'll be another one popping up at some point in the future. She's like Chesterton and Tolkien and Lewis. She's one of those people that keeps coming back like a boomerang because she's so important.
Now, the reason that I wanted to have you on is because University of Georgetown and one other school, there was a Flannery O'Connor Hall at the University of Georgetown. It's gone. They removed her name because some crank discovered allegedly racist overtones in some letters that Miss O'Connor had written before she died in the 1950s. This is, and the reason I wanted you to come on is because you can share this sentiment. You had some dabblings in the past with the issue of racism. Should people not read Joseph Pierce because of what, you know, the former life that you have written about and that you had? I don't think so. You've asked God to forgive you. God said yes. Who am I to say no? But this is a slander. This is a horrible slander against Flannery O'Connor, and the Jesuits are behind it. And no one is saying anything about it. I just said, let me give Joseph or someone the chance to rescue the reputation of Flannery O'Connor before it's too late.
Well, I think that Flannery O'Connor is going to outlive Georgetown University, quite frankly, so I'm not too concerned. Georgetown University turned its back on Christ several decades ago, so the fact it's now turning its back on Flannery O'Connor, we might see as a token of honour.
Oh, just a small point of correction. It's Loyola University. Georgetown also, there's something about Georgetown in there.
Yeah, well, basically, if Georgetown hasn't removed any reference to Flannery O'Connor, it will. The point is that Georgetown and Loyola are dead as far as their life in Christ is concerned. They've chosen nihilism. They've chosen the spirit of the age over the Holy Spirit, and we shouldn't be surprised that they're now making martyrs of Christians such as Flannery O'Connor. But to address the issue, yes, there are a couple of private letters that Flannery O'Connor wrote in which she expresses views towards our black brothers, which is not good, all right? My response, I wrote about this actually at the Magically Conservative on the alleged racism of Flannery O'Connor. First of all, her work is markedly anti-racist, as you can see from reading it. And the other thing about it is, you know, do we stop reading the works of George Bernard Shaw because he supported Stalin? Do we stop reading P.G. Woodhouse because he showed some sympathy to Hitler? Do we not read Ernest Hemingway because he supported the communists in the Spanish Civil War? Or do we not read Roy Campbell because he supported Franco in the Spanish Civil War? And obviously, you know, a great work of literature stands on its own merits for what it says. And the way that it says it. And if we're going to have a free society where we can actually free to read and listen to different points of view, you don't start basically eradicating, exterminating, burning books and banning books and burning people and banning people because they disagree with you. So if we actually want a free society, we have to still allow works of people that were sympathetic to the communists to be published and read. We have to have works of people that sympathetic to fascism to be read and discussed. That's what a free society is. That's what it is to actually have the discussion with each other about what reality is. To just basically just ban everybody who disagrees with you is totalitarianism. It's the burning and banning of books, which leads to the burning and banning of people. And we have to oppose that. And that's like Loyola basically have caved in to totalitarianism.
And when you interviewed Alexander Solzhenitsyn in 1999, what do you think Solzhenitsyn would say about this cancel culture?
Well, he would see the specter of Joseph Stalin and the Soviet Union reemerging in front of our eyes, and he would probably roll his eyes and sort of reflect somewhat wistfully and maybe even wryly with a sense of dark humor that people never learn the lessons of history. That doesn't matter how many times the same mistakes are made, with the consequent destruction of millions of people. Give a couple of generations when that can be buried and brushed under the carpet and forgotten about by people that know nothing of history, and the same thing happens all over again. It's a tragedy, but it's also, quite frankly, a comedy, and ultimately it's a divine comedy because, you know, this is all part of God's providence. That if we don't learn the lessons of history, we will repeat them over and over and over again. And it's for those of us that do know about the past to make sure that as many other people know about the past as possible so that the damage done by ignorance of the past can be limited.
Now, let me ask you about, you've said twice now that on the importance of Flannery O'Connor. So is she important in as much as she's an American, Southern American novelist? And the literary canon, if you will? Or is she just important writ large across all of literary history? What say ye?
Well, I think both. I think that she's certainly incarnate as a Southern writer. She wrote Southern Gothic fiction. So she's rooted in the South, and so there's that aspect which is rooted in a particular place, and if you like, the theology of place that goes with that. But also, as in any Catholic writer, also has that transcendental quality, where the roots are transcended by the cosmological unity of what's being said. In other words, that the morality in her stories is applicable to all people in all cultures at all times. So everybody should read Flannery O'Connor. I think that the more that we perhaps understand the milieu about which she writes, you know, the southern United States during the first half of the 20th century, we'll get even more out of it, because obviously the more of the facts of a story you understand, the more you'll get from it. But the actual morality is of universal significance, and I would suggest that everybody, regardless of whether from the southern states or the northern states or the United Kingdom, should be reading Flannery O'Connor.
And let me just ask a follow-up question of Joseph Pierce, who is our presenter for the Shakespeare Radio Film Festival just 4 days ago, and so many other appearances here, I can't list them all, and an author of his own right. Someday, you know what, Pierce? Someday they're going to find things out about you. When you've made that oft-referred to life expectancy of 72 and go softly into that good night, there's going to be a Joseph Pierce Hall somewhere, and
well,
someone's going to.
I tell you one thing though, that what I made a big point of taking all the skeletons out of my cupboard and rattling them around in front of everybody. So you know, they're welcome to look for some bones that I've left in there if they like, but because I'm not interested in hiding anything.
She's taking the skeletons out and rattled them in front of people. Hey, look at this one here. Don't forget this one now. There'll be a Pierce Hall somewhere. But this is my question. Cancel culture, the corona hoax, as I call it, and all that we're seeing is going along here with this. These are abject lies now that are now being promoted as holy and sacred truths, and it couldn't be any more distant from it. But I believe the reason that we find ourselves in this situation, in entire states and in entire union of states, in your home, former home of the United Kingdom, is because everything or most things that we deal with on a daily basis in our lives, institutionally speaking, that rely upon, Joseph, are so completely out of scale. And it was easy to pull the trigger on something like this because the scale. They were able to go like, oh, well, I can get you 40 million people by Thanos snapped like that. And then all of a sudden, 40 million people are running around with masks. So my question, and I actually wrote this down last night so I didn't forget it, was what do you think E.F. Schumacher would make of all of these lockdown restrictions and what have you and human scale? Since you wrote a book, a follow-up to his book, what do you think, Mr. Schumacher, what do you make of this in regard to scale? Am I right?
Yes, well, I would actually answer for Mr. Schumacher in the Schumacherian words that I used in an article I finished writing about an hour ago, in fact, for the Imaginative Conservative, which I imagine will be published this weekend. It's called Big Brother and Doctor Who. And Doctor Who is WHO, as in capitalized, uppercase, as in World Health Organization. That's basically because what's being called the experts are now calling for the World Health Organization and the United Nations generally to be given far more powers, so that they have more power than nation states, so that they can cope and deal with any future pandemics or other global issues. So basically, the logic is, right, that if a problem is caused by big government, we need bigger government to solve the problem caused by big government. That's the whole argument of these people. If a problem is caused by centralization of power, you solve that problem by even more centralization of power. If a problem is caused by globalism, you solve the problem by even more globalism. Now, you know, obviously, that's madness. The logical alternative, if a problem is caused by big government, let's have less government and smaller government and local government. If problem is caused by centralization, let's have decentralization. If a problem is caused by globalism, let's have less globalism. I mean, that's the logic. That's the logic that Schumacher brought to his books, Small is Beautiful, and that's the logic I brought to my article that I wrote this morning.
So it is a it does come down to scale ultimately, and they can get away with this because things are out of scale. They're so completely out of proportion that, as I said, you can Amazon snap your finger, you can Apple snap or Google snap or Kroger snap or Walmart snap, bammo. You've got tens of millions of willing and obedient subjects immediately going, well, I really don't like it, but I got to go to Walmart to get my ham. Again, it just defeats the whole purpose of life, if you ask me, which is solidarity, camaraderie, living in that great family of Christianity. That's what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to be numbers in the cog in the wealth balance sheet of Jeff Bezos. It'd be really easy to fall into a serious state of depression over this. Not just kind of concern, but outright depression. And unfortunately, Joseph, there's so many hundreds of millions running around or ambling around aimlessly that don't have the faith. Or have not embraced the opportunity to have the faith, don't have anywhere to turn to, that they do get overrun with depression. Suicides are at all-time record highs in every civilized country in the world except Sweden.
That's because, Mike, they're not civilized countries. I mean, we talked about nihilism earlier.
Mm-hmm.
These are all countries overtaken by nihilism, and nihilism annihilates, as I said. So basically, if people have nothing but narcissism, then when their life stinks, if all they have is themselves and their self-worship, and things go wrong, they cut themselves off, they excommunicate themselves, they commit suicide. It's a tragedy, and those people that are responsible for philosophies that encourage narcissism are going to have a big price to pay, basically, when they meet their maker. Because they'll see how many people ended their lives because of the poison fed to them. I mean, that's why, you know, in Shakespeare, the way that Hamlet's father is killed is having poison poured into his ear. But that serves as a metaphor for all the lies in the rest of the play. In other words, lies are poison poured into the ear. And when those people that have made a career out of poisoning people's ears with their lies, and those people end up committing suicide, then and when they meet their maker, those people who did the poisoning, they're going to have to account for that.
No, I completely agree. He is Joseph Pierce, author of too many books. You told me you were working on a new book. What are you working on?
I'm working on a book which I'm calling Faith of Our Fathers, A History of True England. So it's basically a history of Catholic England from the time of the Apostles. The faith first came to England in 63 AD, so within 30 years of the crucifixion, and right through to the 21st century. So, and I'm currently, you'll be pleased to know that the last time I did any writing, I'm going to do some more writing this morning on it. The last time I did any writing, I had the opportunity to kill off Henry VIII. That was great fun.
It would only be 60 years later when the entire House of Tudor line would thankfully be killed off as well.
that's about 2 weeks from now. I'm getting off the rest of the Tudors.
Only you, Joseph. Joseph is an entrepreneur in his own right. What is that website that you write at daily that people can go to and follow? JosephPierce.co, is that what it is?
It's jpierce.co. Yeah, if you want to see what I'm up to, perhaps join my inner sanctum where there's lots of exclusive podcasts. Do check out jpierce.co.
It sounds like a nice Oxford shirt. Oh, what are you wearing? Oh, it's a J. Pierce. Do you like it?
Yeah, I'm a designer label. You know that.
You should be a designer label. Oh, one final thing. Two issues ago, the St. Austin Review, your lovely bride made her literary debut. Or was she literary before you met her?
Oh, she's always been literary. In actual fact, she's been writing for the Epoch Times for some time, and she's writing for the Imagine Observer for some time. She's a very gifted writer, as I should say in her presence, Domina non sum dignus.
I'm not worthy. Now, I found the story. I read the story, and I found the story. The thing I found most intriguing about the story was the photograph of you and her on your wedding day getting blessed by St. John Paul II.
Yeah, well, what, talk about getting off to a flying start, you know, to get blessed by a saint on your honeymoon. I mean, yeah, we have no excuse but to have a good marriage after that, right?
Yeah, and I'm looking at the photograph. I'm going, was that Joseph? No, no, he's got dark hair. That can't be Joseph. But that was a very young Jay Pierce.
It was a very young Jay Pierce. They were met. That was many moons ago.
Well, it's a lovely picture. I'm sure it's hanging up on the Pierce family home. Joseph, you're the only one that could have pulled this interview off about Flannery O'Connor. I'm sure people appreciate your candor about the letter and about Miss O'Connor's importance. It's a subject that we don't talk about often enough. You know, we have Shakespeare Film Festival. Maybe we ought to have a Flannery O'Connor Film Festival one time. Even though there aren't any radio dramas, there are surely enough short stories that she wrote that could be turned into, you know, little podcast and dramas. She's a very talented and gifted. And by the by, you know, Flannery O'Connor came around at a time, and I suspect that she would have been reading great writers like Richard Weaver, you know, the man who wrote that ideas have consequences, and, you know, the Southern tradition at bay. And some of what I've read from Flannery, I like because she's challenging this narrative that everything about the South and Southern is wrong. It needs to be destroyed, needs to be made Northern. And she's one of those, like those 12 men that said, I'll take my stand. Well, 30 years later, Flannery O'Connor took her stand, didn't she?
Yeah, she's part of that Southern agrarian tradition. She doesn't write about agrarianism per se, but all of her short stories and novels are set in that Southern agrarian culture. So she lived and breathed it.
And it comes out in the writing. That's another reason to read her. And again, she is dark, which is surprising for a female novelist of that era, the 1950s. She would stack up very well against against many of the superstars of today, of the dystopian superstars of today. And I'm going to leave you with this quote. I got this from Brainy Quotes. I hope that the Flannery actually said it, because I should commit it to memory. Here you go. Are you ready? This is Flannery O'Connor. Quote, everywhere I go, I'm asked if I think the university stifles writers. My opinion is that they don't stifle enough of them. There's many a bestseller that could have been prevented by a good teacher.
That is a bona fide Flannery, because I've heard it before.
I clapped out loud. I clapped my hands when I read that. That's awesome. I'm going to have that printed and stuck on a business card. It's so good. You can say the same thing about film and radio hosts and other things. All right, Joseph, I'll let you go. I hear the rooster crowing. Give our best to your lovely wife and family. Thanks for all that you do for us here on the Crusade Channel and all of your literary works. And we shall talk again soon.
Yes, indeed, Mike. And you keep up the great work you're doing. Keep the Crusade going.
Crusade is going to go, God willing. Just one more day. I'm only doing one more day. And then we'll talk about the next. So I'm good for today. All right, Joseph, God bless you.
God bless you.
All right, we'll talk soon.